The following is presented by Le Sommet Coors Light. Celebrity guests, entertainment, and oh, a bit of sports. Every Wednesday night on RDS.
Excellent. Simon, how are you?
I'm good. Excited about Game 7 tonight. And, of course, you are in Tampa Bay. And a couple of things I wanted to ask you. From a coach's perspective, both these coaches looking at their players, is there a level you too concerned that they're too loose? Is there a level that you talk to a player if you feel he's a little bit uptight, just a little bit different than you're accustomed to seeing your player?
No, I don't think so. I think everybody kind of knows what's at stake. For Washington, they had a Game 7 already in this series. Obviously, Game 6, they were working without a safety net. And now both teams are working without a safety net. It's the first time in the playoffs that Tampa's actually faced that predicament. They didn't have to do it against New Jersey in the first round. They didn't have to do it against Boston in the second round. And now here they are in the Eastern Conference Final. And in Game 7, it's the first time they've had to play without a safety net. For the Capitals, they've basically been doing that since the first round. When you think about it, they were down 0-2 after losing two overtime games at home and had to win double overtime in Game 3 in Columbus. And if they don't win that, it's a sweep. They're done. So they've been playing without a safety net for a long time. They're comfortable in that environment. But I think Tampa understands what's at stake based on their practice today, and they've got a huge amount of Game 7 experience, almost 80 games internally of Game 7 experience.
Pierre, when you look at a Game 7, and clearly a Game 7 turnover leading to a goal could be is a lot worse than a turnover in game number 32. But when I'm trying to break down a Game 7, I always look at it from a perspective, whether it's basketball or hockey especially. Can you say that advantage to the team that doesn't really have to adjust their game? And what I mean by that is, if you're a club that, you know, likes to see your defensemen pitch in, maybe take some chances, maybe some more stretch passes that may lead to turnovers, but that's the brand of hockey that you play. And do you take it back a notch because it is a Game 7 because the turnover may be a lot more detrimental?
No, you just manage when you do it on the clock. You remind your players on the bench. You don't want to give up a goal in the first minute of a period. You don't want to give up a goal in the last 2 minutes of a period. I know most people say the last minute. I would tell you in a Game 7, it's the last 2 minutes of a period. And then obviously you manage if you're up by two. You know, you're kind of pulling the reins back. I remember coaching in games where we would be an aggressive 2-1-2 forecheck team, and eventually we'd get to a point in a game, and this is obviously a Stanley Cup winning team, and you'd say, okay, boys, there's 15 minutes to go or 17 minutes to go, and you'd have a 2 or 3 goal lead. We're out of the 2-1-2, and we're going into the 1-4 delay, and that was when the red line was in, obviously, so we could just shut everything down, and we knew with 15 minutes to go, unless somebody did something silly and took a double minor or took a five-minute major, we were going to win the game. So it's changed a lot, but you've got to be able to manage the minutes and when people do things a little bit more when it's a glowing situation like a Game 7.
So, Pierre, it's Game 7 and everyone's excited. And, you know, people have been coming up to me over the course of the day, oh, Mitch, who do you think's going to win Game 7? I mean, that's the question everyone's asking, right? I know you don't do predictions, but can you play out both scenarios for us? So, Tampa Bay wins if blank and Washington wins if blank.
Great question. I'll go with Washington first because they're the visitors. The Washington Capitals will win if they maintain the physical play that they did in Game 6 without taking penalties, and that Braden Holtby delivers a virtuoso performance. Tampa Bay will win if they dictate the terms of the game speed-wise, if Andrei Vasilevsky has to make 30 or less saves. And because I bring up the 30 number, if you look at the shots on goal throughout the entire series, Washington has dominated the shot clock, and they've been pushing almost 40 shots, 36 to 40 shots per game. If they can take that back, dial it back to 30 in this series anyways, I would say that would probably limit Washington to maybe one goal or two goals, and that would give Tampa a huge advantage. So those would be the different criteria I'd put on both teams if either one was going to win.
So for the Lightning and the speed quotient that was so evident in the first couple rounds of the playoffs, do you go back and do you try to reestablish what worked for them? Do you show them how good they were, how they were able to carry the play, how their first line dominated? What's the key to getting back to that?
I show them what I did in the first 20 minutes of Game 5. We got a 2-0 lead against these guys in our building in Game 5 because we put pedal to the metal, and we backed them off, and we thoroughly humiliated them on the forecheck. We thoroughly humiliated them off the rush, and we were really precise with our passing. We were not careless coming out of our own zone, and because of that, we were able to dictate the terms in a lot of different situations. That's what I'm showing them. That's the only thing I'm showing them, the positive energy from Game 5 in the first 20 minutes of the game.
Pierre, just wondering, you know, Alex Ovechkin, you look at his roster. I don't know if John Carlson comes back or not. This might be the last hurrah. We don't know. But when we talk about Alex Ovechkin, and if you're in a conversation with anybody who talks to you about Alex Ovechkin, and you talk about the legacy of this player, what do you talk about?
That he's going to be in the Hall of Fame. Here's a guy that's won 7 Rocket Richard trophies. He won his 7th this year, scored 49 goals. Here's a man that's internationally won world junior championships. He's won world championships. He's been a captain of his team. He's won a Calder trophy. He's won an Art Ross trophy. I mean, you start looking at some of the things he's established as a player individually, it's off the freaking charts. So that's what I think of. And what I've been so impressed with by him this playoff season in particular, he has done it as a team man. Not as an individual, but as a team man. I haven't, outside of him breaking a stick out of frustration once in this series, I've done most of their games in the entire playoff. One of the things that's really impressed me about him is how he has been a true leader, not a quasi leader, but a true leader, and that really impresses me.
Well, on that note, Ovechkin and Backstrom, they're both playing in games 7, number 10 apiece. I'm just wondering, for those two guys, Pierre, do you think they approach game 7 a little bit differently now that they're playing in their 10th compared to when they're younger playing in their first?
They might. I mean, I don't know the answer to that because, as I was telling Rod before I came on with you, Mitch Gallo, there's a lot of superstitious guys, so there's not going to be a lot of talking done before the game with interviews with players and with coaches and things like that. So they may approach it differently, but none of us will know because we're really not talking to them and they're not talking to us, which is probably a better idea for them just because they want to stay focused and be in the moment. Again, I'll stress, Washington, it's a pretty simple formula for them. Bring the same physical dimension that you brought in Game 6 because they clearly established something that we hadn't seen earlier in this series. Bring that physical dimension without taking penalties to this Game 7, and they've got a legitimate chance to be successful. Anything less than that, I think they're going to have a hard time winning here.
Now, earlier in the series when the Capitals were up 2-0, Nick Backstrom, while he was injured, he took a photo with a bunch of fans who had a broom in their hand. And I know this might sound like a silly question, but a lot of people were making a big deal of it, saying that the Capitals are too loose. Do you think the two games that they lost to make it 2-2 and then eventually 3-2 was a wake-up call, or do you think that stuff is completely irrelevant?
No, mate, it's not irrelevant at all because the other team puts it up on their bulletin board. I'm telling you right now, media don't see it because they don't get to go in the entire facility where Tampa Bay works out, but they definitely do. And I'll tell you, case in point, when we played in the 91 final in Pittsburgh, we lost game one on home ice and Minnesota really dismantled us. They were the much better team in game one. We had to make some really subtle adjustments, face-off play, neutral zone play, how we attacked John Casey, their goalie, lots of different things we had to adjust. But I can tell you right now, one of the things that they did that was not smart, their media talked about how they measure up for rings. And it was in the media. And don't worry, we even though there was no internet in those days, our guys read it because we got the clippings every day. And that was up on our board. And our guys were very familiar with that. And that was a major motivational tool going into games 2, 3, 4, and 5. We eventually won in 6. We won game 6, 8-0. But it definitely was brought up.
Are the guys generally able to enjoy game 7? I mean, you hear it. It's what they play for. It's been a long journey. It's game 101 for some of these guys. Are they able to actually have fun, or is it just too tense?
Only if you win. It's only fun if you're winning. If you're not winning, if you're chasing the game from the start, it's a diabolical mental exercise. It's not a whole lot of fun to participate in. it's really tough. So I've seen it. I don't even know how many I've broadcast. But there's been three this spring, and this will be the third one that I've had the privilege of broadcasting. So I can tell you, the guys in Nashville, they may tell you it was fun to play in Game 7. Not the way it ended up for them, it wasn't. And I could tell you that for the Toronto Maple Leafs, it may have been fun the first 20 minutes, but the last 25 minutes of that game wasn't a whole lot of fun for them to play in. So those are the two from this year. If you're on the wrong end of the track, it's not a whole lot of fun. If you're driving the train, it's a whole lot of fun.
Pierre, you look at the Tampa Bay Lightning, who were shut out last game, and you know Rod spoke about just looking over the film and from your last game if you're the Capitals. But what do you tell a team that usually scoring comes easy to them after a game that they're shut out going into the biggest game of the year? Do you leave it alone, or do you go back to the room and you work on the film?
Well, I would leave it alone. I wouldn't really be putting too much negativity into any kind of talk. I think negative energy at this time is just, it's what it is. It's a drain. It's just terrible. So you have to be realistic. I'll give you a case in point. We lose game one in 92 to Minnesota, and I remember the late Badger Bob Johnson coming up to me saying, Pierre, we got to fix our faceoffs. I think there were 80 faceoffs, if I remember correctly. I think there were 80 in game one. I think we lost 60 of 80. And Mark Burrell, Bobby Smith, Neil Broughton, Dave Gagne, they cleaned our guys out. They cleaned us out. I mean, it wasn't even a fair fight. They smoked us. So what we did is we made a tape of all the face-off situations in the game. And we saw subtle little things over the course of a night of studying tape that they were doing to beat our guys. And the next, so we made another tape to show, we cut it down, obviously, and we just highlighted the important parts of it. And we had a meeting with Ronnie Francis, Mario Lemieux, Brian Trotche, Randy Gillen, and Kenny Priestley, all our centermen. And we went over tactics, and what we developed was we called it face-off protocols for the rest of the series, and we eventually wiped them out. So adjustments definitely matter a lot. They definitely matter.
Pierre, you always, you know, during a broadcast, whether it's this Game 7 or other Game 7s and other sports as well, they talk about the road team weathering the storm, you know, surviving the first 10 minutes. And just, do you think that the Capitals do have a game plan for the first 10 minutes? Do they have something for the first 12 minutes? Or is it, no, you got to let your boys go out there and they got to play their game?
See, I'm a big believer, and I'm so glad you brought that up, because it's true, Simon. A lot of people say weather the first 10 minutes, the start's the thing. It's all legit. It's all true. Or as a coaching staff, you could present it another way. And I saw Scotty presented a different way. Bob Johnson presented a different way. We're not sitting back. We got to play to our identity. We're going after them. We want to plant a seed of doubt in their fans' minds and in their players' minds. So rather than sit back and let them dictate the terms to us, we went and pushed them physically, speed-wise, skill-wise, everything. Vocally, I mean, we had a lot of chirpers. So we did it. We pushed. And I think that's probably a better formula than to say, oh, we have to weather this storm. No, how about creating a storm against the opposition? And I think that's probably a better way to pursue it. Again, it depends on the type of team that you have. But, you know, again, the experiences I've had with the teams that I've had, that's the way we presented it.
Pierre, who was the best chirper on that team?
Kevin Stevens was very good. And Johnny Cullen, before he got traded, was outstanding. But I would say Brian Trotche and Kevin Stevens together.
As a tandem.
They were a tandem. They were lethal.
They were
really good.
Is that from the bench or even at ice level?
On the ice. You live. Know, subtle things that are said. But on the bench, yeah, they were very good.
I remember those teams very well, but I just would have never, thought that Brian Trotche would be at the top of that list.
Oh yeah, well, part of it was we played the Rangers, and so the Ranger Islander thing was very much alive in his heart still. And for Kevin Stevens, he was always matched up against Brian Leetch and Jeff Bookaboom, and so those guys. And Leach and Stevens were buddies and friends from Boston College. So it was pretty incessant, especially poor Bookaboom. Jeff was such a good player. Oh, my gosh. When he and Leach were together, I mean, they were a big part of the 94 Cup team for the Rangers. But, yeah, no, it wasn't easy for them.
Some news and notes from the National Hockey League, Pierre. Word out of San Jose is that the San Jose Sharks will come to terms with Evander Kane, 7 years, $7 million. I liked what I saw from him in his time there. I liked what I saw in the postseason. Obviously, nobody likes the suspension. But do you like this fit as a for him going forward with the San Jose Sharks or with the Sharks with Evander Kane?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm anybody that's listened to this show, I've been telling Mitch Melnick for years, if I were a guy running a team, I'd try to get that player. I have a different relationship with him than maybe some other people. Just because I've seen him in a lot of his exposed moments in terms of where he's been, you know, having to fight through things, and other times when he's been on top of it. So I've seen both of it, both of the things, the positives and the negatives. And I'm a big fan of the person. I know there have been issues, but I think there are ways of dealing with those things. And so I don't discount those kinds of players at all. And I think Pete DeBoer's figured that out, and I think Doug Wilson has figured that out in San Jose. And he's an important player. The good news for them is they're getting a guy that I think really appreciates the opportunity of playing there. The good news for the Buffalo Sabres and the bad news for some people in the Eastern Conference is because of that signing, Buffalo gets a first-round pick of San Jose in 2019.
Yep, yeah, that went quietly. Yes, absolutely.
That's part of it. And so there's, and I was in touch with a couple managers last night, and they're like, holy mackerel, what an arsenal Buffalo's got the potential to build with all these draft picks that they've accumulated. And they're not done dealing. I can tell you that right now. They are not done making deals at all in Buffalo.
Pierre, I want to use the comparable with Max Pacioretty. And we started off the show talking about the Evander Kane. I am also a big fan of this hockey player. And he's 26, and Max is 30. If you look at the body of work the last few years, the number of goals Max Pacioretty has scored in the league, it's elite. It's him, Alex Ovechkin, Steven Stamkos, Joe Pavelski. Very, very short list. But the fact that he is 30, how is that a detriment to Max Pacioretty and his contract going forward?
I don't think it is. In terms of dollars and cents, I don't think it is. It may be in terms of years. But in terms of dollars and cents, I don't think it is. I think he's going to get what he's going to get dollar-wise. It just comes down to how many years. And that's where, you know, you have to have unbelievable help from your medical people. And this is where, again, the top organizations understand this process. They have expert medical opinion. They've devoured tape, and they've been able to study, is he losing a step? Is he losing some hand quickness? Is the velocity on his shot starting to dissipate? You know, you can talk about all the analytics stuff you want, but you've got to have the evaluation of the eye because analytics isn't going to measure any of that stuff. So that's the best teams have that figured out, and they will know. But I don't think dollars and cents-wise that's going to be an issue. He's going to get the annual salary that his numbers dictate, and they're going to dictate a high number.
Earlier today, the New York Rangers made it official. They hire David Quinn as their new head coach. I don't know much about this gentleman. Perhaps you can enlighten me, please.
Yeah, I can. He's a young man that grew up in Rhode Island. He went to the Kent School in Kent, Connecticut. He was a first-round pick of the old Minnesota North Stars. He went to Boston University. He was drafted by a man by the name of Smokey Cerrone, who was a legendary scout in New England. Lou Nanny was a general manager in Minnesota. The biggest thing I can tell you about David, and I had the privilege of working with David when his career ended, he contracted a thing called Christmas disease. He was very much a similar player to Denny Podvin. I don't want to say he was as good because Denny's in the Hall of Fame and David didn't play a game in the league, but similar type style of player. And David's career ended because of Christmas disease. It's a blood disorder, and if you get hit and bruise, it can kill you because your leg kind or body, wherever it's bruised, will explode and look like a Christmas tree.
My goodness.
So, yeah, no, it's not good. But David is a tremendous man. I've known him since probably 1985, 84, 85. I worked at a ton of hockey schools with him over the years, and you know, I've known him from when he coached in the American League, known him when he coached in Colorado, known him ever since he moved to BU. He's a competent coach. This is a very good hire. It's a millennial hire. It's a retooling hire. It's a teaching hire. And if you look at the roster of the Rangers, most of their top players, not all, but most of them, are college-developed players, and he's got a book on all of them, including, you know, obviously Kevin Shattenkirk, who played at Boston University, and David would know very, very well.
Oh, nice hire by the Rangers. What was the name? Smokey Cerrone?
Yep, Smokey Cerrone. C-E-R-R-O-N-E.
That's got to be top five greatest hockey names ever.
He was a phenomenal scout. I can just tell you, as a young guy that grew up around rinks all over, anytime you had a chance to spend some time with Smokey was good. And then he moved on to the Rangers, and Smokey, you know, drafted a guy that's a pretty good coach in the league right now, Peter Laviolette.
Nice.
He drafted Peter out of Westfield State College when Peter, you know, was playing Division III hockey and eventually made it to the National Hockey League and played on an Olympic team. Smokey was a really, really good scout. As Mel McNalls, I am a big believer in the scouting fraternity. I think most organizations overlook it. And it's that if you do as an organization, it's the death of your franchise. It's the death of it.
Thank you, Pierre. Oh, we'll talk tomorrow and enjoy Game 7.
I really appreciate it. Thanks a lot, Simon. Talk to you tomorrow. Rod, Mitch Gallo, enjoy Game 7. I'm sure you will.
Yeah, absolutely. Won't have as good a seat as Pierre will have. Pierre with a damn good seat there. But looking forward to Game 7 tonight. Capitals versus the Tampa Bay Lightning, a game you can catch here on a TSN 690 puck drop just around a little after 8 o'clock. Gallo, still here? Hit me up with your favorite hockey name.
Like hockey name or hockey nickname?
No, name.
Name?
Oh, well, what do you mean?
Because like hockey nickname, I always loved Doug Gilmour's nickname.
Killer?
Killer.
It's not his, though. It's the guy from Slapshot. He was Killer.
Yeah, but I was a fan of Killer.
Okay.
The Grim Reaper is a great name.
The Grim Reaper is a very good name.
Stewie.
But Smokey Cerrone.
Smokey Cerrone is terrific. I mean, someone
you don't
active.
Play cards. You don't play cards against somebody named Smokey Cerrone.
No, you
Cerrone.
Shouldn't. You're going to be losing your wallet.
Yes.
Current player, Cal Clutterbuck's a great name.
Clutterbuck. Yes, it is.
Clayton Stoner is an excellent name.
Yeah.
There's a name that I want to say that I will not.